The translation, the daughter of Manu, who was fully devoted to her husband, looked upon him as greater even than Providence. Thus she expected great blessings from him. Having served him for a long time, she grew weak and emaciated due to her religious observances. Seeing her condition, Kardama, the foremost of celestial sages, was overcome with compassion and spoke to her in a voice choked with great love. I was thinking what religious observances Devahuti might have done. And of course, usually the tradition is that the wife doesn't eat until after the husband eats. So if Kardama was doing all these fasting things and, you know, investigating the celestial realm, then Devahuti might have had to wait a long time for lunch. And then there may not have been time to even eat because it might have been time to do something else. She had to take care of the ashram and, you know, keep things in order like that. They take care of the cow, you know, so there'd be milk and ghee for sacrifice. Yeah. Amazing. The kind of celestial life they could live. So Prabhupada's purport, the wife is expected to be of the same category as the husband. She must be prepared to follow the principles of the husband, and then there will be happy life. The husband is a devotee, and the wife is materialistic. There cannot be any peace in the home. The wife must see the tendencies of the husband and must be prepared to follow him. So we're talking about this is a kind of a very unusual proposition in the Kali Yuga, the current time, in Kali Yuga. We're always quoting from Parasara's Dharma Shastra, which we found there and Prabhupada recommends. And in the beginning, there's the comment by Parasara says that kings are being overcome by thieves, robbers, rogues, and maidens are becoming mothers, and women are conquering men. This is invariably what happens in the fourth age, the Kali age, like that. So therefore we expect to find this. And Prabhupada also says because we're not being properly protected, women will become independent, you know. And so because of that, we find more predominance in the Kali Yuga. It's quite common to expect this. But then for a lady to have her dharma as following her husband, it's a different thing. Even talking to some of our friends and, you know, younger fellows who are getting married and stuff in India, they're commenting that their wives have been trained like boys, you know, to be competitive in the comma. Yeah. And that's kind of a before that was the basic principle that girls didn't really compete with boys. It'd be fun playing, but the basic principle was that, you know, girls followed guys and stuff. But as soon as they're put in the school with everybody else and trained to compete with everybody else, I mean, Prabhupada says, then it becomes difficult in the household life. You know, it's unnatural. You know. So many aspects to this. Of course, this whole chapter is such a wonderful, you know, I remember Jayananda told us, he showed us this little booklet that Prabhupada had published as a Grihastha manual. In the very beginning, you know, it published as a Grihastha manual. And it was taken, as I remember, almost exclusively from this chapter. And Prabhupada was showing this is how, you know, the ideal situation like that. And Prabhupada says that Devahuti represents the ideal wife, and then Kardama, in terms of satisfying her and everything else, represents the ideal husband. And Prabhupada says, but no ordinary man can expect a wife like Devahuti. And he goes on to say, no ordinary girl can expect a husband like Kardama. You know? But here's the ideal. And we're trying to do that and then create a nice situation. Madame was talking so much yesterday about, you know, the Varna Ashram system is to create an ambience, create a situation. And it really helps. Yeah, it really helps. I find it rare to find that people are, most of temples have a full morning program. And then you can get some attendance, you know, and if you, the sannyasi, I go there and start This is a little bit like a little pushing, and you can increase, and a little bit of kind of just nudging. It increases in the morning program. And the evening program, many times, is neglected. People are running here and there. And you really got to kind of pull yourself in. Stop the mode of passion and get into the mode of goodness. But when you have both morning and evening program, oh, wow, the whole day. And it's very natural then to be engaged in the Sankirtan movement during the day. And, of course, some people are making money for the Sankirtan movement. And so to create this Bhagavad Dharma is very, very potent. But then it's difficult again unless there's a Varna Ashram and some training in Varna Ashram. It hasn't got to be a lot. There's indication of that. As devotees, you pick it up very naturally. It's included within these stories of the Bhagavatam. Again, Madan's pointing out again and again, what's the purpose of all this, And so we see the purpose is a conclusion that Kardama Muni goes back to the spiritual world, Devahuti goes back to the spiritual world. So we have a picture here of I found a very nice picture. Some of these pictures come up on the internet and they go away. This is very nice. It's Ram and Lakshman and Sita. And this I kind of think, usually they're portrayed as like being 40 years old or something, like maybe 40 years old. But here they look like this, young boys and girls, Maybe like what, 18 years old, 18, 25, maybe like 25 years old, but still looking like 18, And they're very simple, but you can look at them and tell them these are competent guys with their bows and arrows and barefoot in the forest. And there's Sita. Above that, we have a citation, which is very, very famous. Does anybody know what this citation means? Everybody's muted, so you can't tell me. Okay. Anyway, you can chat it. Anybody want to toss in the chat there? If you know what this citation means. Iyam Sita Mamasuta Saha Dharma Charitava. And you can actually even look it up on the internet. It'll pop up. So this is from, I think, from the Valmiki Ramayana, not from the Ramacharitmanas by Tulsidas, maybe in both. And this is what Janak said, the whole ceremony and the families involved and the brothers and everything else. It was a big event. It was basically a worldwide event, with tremendous economic and political implications going on here, this marriage, And so when Janak Maharaj came, and he came to pick up, to see Sita for the wedding, of course he was the emperor, Rama's father, Dasarath. He came for the wedding ceremony after Rama had come back and said, this is the agreement, it's okay with you. And he said, of course, Janak is my close friend, and this is a wonderful arrangement. So he arrived at the door with his ministers and family and armies and everything else, and asked to be admitted into the palace and everything else. And the message came to Janak. He told the messenger to go back and says, you go back and tell Emperor Dasarath, why is the master of the house asking me to be admitted into his own house? So on. So a very, very deep meeting. So finally, then it came the time when Maharaj Dasarath was handing Sita to Ram. And she's always protected. She can be delicate. She can be gentle. She doesn't have to worry about the future and all these things, So she's being handed to Ram. And he said this, Iyam Sita Mama Suta Saha Dharma Charitava. This is Sita, my daughter. She will forever tread the path of Dharma like her own shadow. That. And we see here in the picture, look at the shadows. The shadows in the picture. It's kind of nice there, This is Sita, my daughter. She will forever tread the path of Dharma behind you like your own shadow. And that's what the pride, Prabhupada says a Kshatriya is proud if all of his subordinates are happy, like that and so on. A Vaishya is happy if he's prosperous and can give nice charity. And a sannyasi is, is happy if he's always contemplating the Lord within himself. Within himself, different manners he's contemplating. Then he feels, I'm doing my job. Yeah. So this is a very, very nice discussion of the Dharma. And of course, today is, for us, I guess it was yesterday for you all, today is Sitastami, you know, the birthday of Sita Devi. So this is the point Prabhupada saying, the husband and wife, if you're in the same category, then it makes everything, you know, very, very happy. And if the wife is materialistic, then she's never happy and the husband's always being harassed, and in the end, probably in modern times, it will result in separation. Prabhupada continues, from Mahabharata, we learn that when Gandhari understood that her would-be husband, Dhritarashtra, was blind, she immediately began to practice blindness herself. Thus, as she covered her eyes and played the part of a blind woman, she decided that since her husband was blind, she must also act like a blind woman. Otherwise, she would be proud of her eyes, and her husband would be seen as inferior. Inferior, you know. So many subtle things, you know. The Dhritarashtra, yeah. In the Peter Brook Mahabharata, when it comes to the scene, Gandhari is like a young girl. She's coming to the city with her retinue from Afghanistan, and going to be married to the king, the prince, the crown prince, who I guess now is the king, actually, at this point. Marriage has been arranged. She's already been betrothed. Then her servant comes in and says, "Oh, mistress, we've been betrayed. What is that?" You know, and she then reveals to her that her future husband is going to be blind, you know. And then Gandhari in the movie, you know, the play, says, "Give me my veil," you know. And so he gives her her veil. And she's staring at her servant. And her servant girl says, "Why are you staring at me?" She says, "Because your face is the last face I will ever behold in this world." And then she ties herself up like that. Yeah, okay. So very intense, living life with intensity. T.S. Eliot has this whole thing about the straw men, you know, coming out of the 60s. And we were the straw men, you know, with this nothing going on, just simple, superficial lives. And he says, the world revolves like an ancient woman, like an old woman gathering fuel in a vacant lot. The world revolves like an old woman gathering fuel in a vacant lot. And that's what it is. You know, we just kind of, we die, we live and we die, and there's just, that was it. no depth. You know? So Vedic culture, the Varna Ashram system, provides spiritual depth, perspective, and then the soul can show up. The soul can show up. It's even more brilliant. But at least if there's a mirror, it's clear. And then the real figures and the real forms can be seen, you know. This also brings to mind something else in terms of Varna Ashram. I remember that Prabhupada said that if the wife is older than the husband, it will never work. You know? And she'll never be able to submit herself. She'll always think, "Oh, I know more than my husband," this and that. Of course, in Vedic culture, the girl is usually something like about, 8 years younger than the boy, or 6 years, maybe 6 years, 6 years younger at least than the boy. Maybe when she's 12, she's then betrothed to a boy who's like 18 or something. And when she reaches 16, then they formally start living together and having children. But by then, of course, he maybe finished his education, everything else, usually 25, you know, so maybe 13 years older. So some very, very great differences, you know, very great differences in the cultures and stuff. And so we can see that in terms of this, like you go to other countries before, especially, you know, third world countries didn't have the technology and everything else that we did, you know. But then we, in terms of having got the technology, the technique for this is social life, this family life, which of course, much more fundamental, you know. So Mahabharata is also an example, another example. So many examples. Yeah. The word samanuvrata indicates that it is the duty of a wife to adopt the special circumstances in which the husband is situated. Of course, if the husband is as great as Kardama Muni, then a very good result accrues from following him. But even if the husband is not a great devotee like Kardama Muni, it is the wife's duty to adapt herself according to his mentality. That makes married life very happy. You know? So she has to adopt the special circumstances in which the husband is situated. Because always details you know, about this. Yeah. And so it's a great challenge, you know. But in other ways than that, it's simple, it's clear. Okay, the general arrangements were there, this family, my family, and I'm still a part of my family, and I'm married to this boy, and his family is a family, and both families knew each other, and we all talked about and stuff. But now then there's very kind of specific details. Like, for example, maybe my husband has allergies, so I have to adapt to his allergies, or he's in a certain social political situation with his brothers. You know, he has a certain kind of boss, you know. You know? Can we think of anybody who adopted herself to her husband, even though he wasn't a great devotee? Maybe the most famous example of somebody adopting herself. You can put it in the chat there if you want to. She's an example of one of the six chaste women in the universe. Okay, I don't see any chats there. Okay, what's her name? Oh, there's a thing here. Got a number coming up. Mandodari. Yeah, she was the daughter. As maybe you don't know this, as I was a member of Vishvakarma. You know, her daddy was a big engineer. So she probably was like, you know, death on wheels with Legos like that. Back off when Mandodari and her friends start making houses and villages and stuff with Legos, you know. So her father was the universal engineer. And Ravana was coming back after having he was conquering the whole universe, I think, and he basically had this convertible Cadillac with all the girls tossed in the back. He was capturing like that, and they were all lamenting and crying and whatever, and at the same time kind of looking at him and, well, you're not so bad looking, yeah, okay, you know. And then he came and somehow or other he saw Mandodari. And this is part of the trick, you know, the girls don't expose themselves. They don't stimulate, you know, guys to want to run off with them and stuff like that and so on, you know. So he saw her somehow or other, and then he told her father, he said, okay, I'm the emperor of the universe, and it would be a great honor for your house if I take your daughter as my wife. So bring her out. And Vishvakarma didn't want to do this, you know, and so he was going to fight or something. And then Mandodari ran out and she said, you know, daddy, you know, if you fight with him, then he's going to kill you. He's going to kill all my brothers, you know, and take me anyway, you know. So give me to him like that. And then, of course, there'll be benefit, you know. So that was the deal. And Ravana then, you know, looked after her family to some degree and then she was a chaste wife. She accepted the bargain. Yeah. And so when Sita was brought back, kidnapped and brought back like that, right away, because of her situation, she could tell what was happening. She could see that this is a chaste girl, you know. The other girls all surrendered to Ravana. Ravana didn't rape any of them. All of them surrendered to him and, you know, kind of accepted, okay, we're not going to get anybody else. And this guy is, Ravana would, you know, Ravana had one whole head just for dealing with romance, how to flatter ladies and, you know, and everything else. And so they were, in the end, they felt, you know, if they weren't pure devotees or something, they were feeling okay, you know. And but Sita, chaste girl, So Mandodari could see what the result was going to be. And so she told him, as a loving wife, send her back. You know, she's going to destroy you and everybody else. So that was her. She adopted herself to special circumstances. In the modern age, one devotee in Los Angeles, the big leader there, had a fall down, and she was trying to follow him and maybe smoke marijuana with him, his wife, whatever. And she was saying, this is Dharma, Prabhu. Devotees wrote to Prabhupada, and he said, in other ages, this might be possible, but since your husband is falling down, then you should take shelter of the temple and the devotees, separate yourself from him, and try to help him reform himself. But if he doesn't, then that's unfortunate, but then you should just take shelter of the devotees and stuff. Yeah. So many details. One point, too, about this point about a wife is an enemy. She gets remarried in the presence of grown-up children. Parasara, which Prabhupada recommends, says that the first thing is for the wife to follow her husband. If he takes sati, so if he dies, she takes sati. If he becomes a sannyasi, she becomes sannyasini, like that, like Vishnu Priya. But second class is if she gets remarried, she doesn't get remarried, but she enjoys life, you know. So Vishnu Priya, she's having a nice time, didn't get remarried, and having nice clothes and going to nice functions and parties, okay. Third class, but progressive in Kali Yuga, is for her to get remarried after 6 years, like that, 6 years. And again, we were talking at one point that Narahari made, that if the girl's young and her children are young, then after 6 years of taking another husband with this idea of giving some protection to her kids and stuff like that, that certainly he would not be an enemy. Would actually, I've seen it, would quite naturally the young children identify. And everybody understands, you know, what the situation is. And I have my biological father, and okay, then you, it's quite acceptable as dharma, progressive. Yeah. And the other one is, of course, that the children are the representative of the father, you know, considered like the same body, practically speaking. So when the father takes sannyas and the children are grown up, then the wife is supposed to be put into the care of the grown-up children. So for her to accept another husband then becomes, you know, like a direct, you know, adultery, almost like abandoning the husband and accept like another husband in that sense too. You know? So that's kind of a couple thoughts we had about that point, about why in terms of grown-up children, if she accepts it like that, because the grown-up children are the representative of the father, so the father is present, you know. So why is she doing this? You know? So in different circumstances, you know, the wife needs to adjust herself to those, and then everything will be very nice. You know, my notary's life was actually quite good in a whole broad perspective like that. Quick. It is also mentioned herein that by following the strict vows of a chaste woman, Princess Devahuti became very skinny, and therefore her husband became compassionate. He knew that she was the daughter of a great king, and yet was serving him just like an ordinary woman. She was reduced in health by such activities, and he became compassionate and addressed her as follows. You know? It's all very interesting. Of course, the natural tendency is to try and enter into this. You know, try and, you know, you see a really good movie and certain things don't quite fit together, and in your mind you're trying to, like, maybe, you know, write the background in that will make all that fit together. And you can see so many times on the internet they'll have how this movie really should have ended. How this movie really should have ended. And so we're always, you know, this is Lila Smarana Swarup. So the Bhagavatam is quite accessible. There's, you might say, just a skeleton structure there. And we're trying to fill in the missing blanks and stuff. And as we do this, of course, the people that were there will, of course, inspire us. Yeah, that's right. That's what happened. You got it. Yeah. One time in Los Angeles, apparently, the devotees were organizing Rukmini Haran, the kidnapping of Rukmini. And it came to the point where Krishna kidnapped her and took her on his chariot. And one devotee, Kalam Chan, he told me the Prabhupada just stood up like that. He was so enthusiastic, you know. He stood up and he said, and she was not a timid girl. She was Kshatrini, you know. So she grabbed the reins of the chariot and was driving the horses, you know, while her husband shot at everybody else like that. So you can see this. You always think of Rukmini as a shy kind of timid thing, you know, compared to Satyabhama or something. But she's like that. But then, you know, in front of her husband, but the necessary, she can show her Kshatrini spirit. And she knew how to ride horses and stuff like that. You know, compared to the husband, shy and chafe. And then after the emergency is over again, she's like acting shy and timid and really fainting, you know, so on. Like that. But very, very nice relationships. But of course, it's not in the Krishna book, but Prabhupada was describing it like that's what happened. I mean, so there probably was, what did happen? You know? She had to, how could her husband go shooting at all these rascals, you know? And she was tossing her lot right into him. He hasn't kidnapped me, you know. I wanted to be kidnapped, you know, by him. You know, he's my guy, you know. And so very, very, it reflects the spiritual world. Daivi Varnashram reflects the spiritual world. And then it creates a situation where we can actually develop the spirit soul. So any kind of questions or comments at this point? I have a few more slides about Sita and Janava, but any kind of comments anybody has at this point or anything about Varna Ashram Dharma?
You have to give me a minute.
Om Namo Bhagavate.
Yeah, right. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Run that Hare quote Krishna. By me again. I want to write it.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Can you hear me, Maharaj?
He's talking.
I can hear somebody.
Okay, Maharaj, Harsh from Bombay calling from a phone.
Oh, yes, sir. There he is, Harsh, the ideal grihasta.
Jokes apart. So, you were talking about this Varnashram Dharma, and with the son takes up the wife and the father goes off. So, what exactly happens when the father does not have a son, or the son himself becomes a brahmachari or something like that, or the son is not taking care of the mother?
A lot of questions there. This is, you know, there's 81. Sometimes it's described that there are 81 dharma shastras, and they'll say things like what you're talking about, you know. In the case where this happens, where that happens, then so-and-so. And then, for example, it may say that the son, okay, becomes brahmachari, then he has to make sure that his mother's being taken care of by his cousins, you know. That's a whole thing. America was founded on ontological individualism, that the individual is the ultimate reality. And so we end up with, like, these not even nuclear families of father, mother, and two kids. We end up then with a divorced family with mother with two small kids, you know, pitiful. But you know that the Indian culture, the idea is extended family. And then everybody is sleeping in everybody else's houses, and, you know, everybody's called auntie and uncle. So if some boy is going to take brahmachari life, and pretty much the idea is the family, you know, to a large degree, it probably will agree with it. Yes, that's very good. It's going to be good for our whole culture. And I know myself, even recently, when our disciple Rock Talk left, his whole family came down from Punjab. It was actually quite intimidating. Like, I knew them all, maybe about 8-10 people, and the ladies and everything else. And they were telling me that, you know, we commiserated Rock Talk's passing, our disciple. And then his nephew, Chunky, yeah, they all said that they all wanted him to become a devotee, you know, like that, and would I accept him and everything else. And they wanted at least one person in the family to be a devotee. Okay. Yeah, and he was a candidate. He was like the idea, kind of, you know. So same way, that's part of the thing, that when the wife's not being taken care of by her son directly, or there are no children, you know, then there are different arrangements. And one is that the cousins, nephews, they can also take care of them and have just as much affection as they do for their mother. Extended family. And then if it's falling apart, then ISKCON. ISKCON should be doing the same thing. Yeah? ISKCON should also be developing like a family. You know? And we're fighting Kali Yuga. But that's the ideal. I think, you know, it's there. Ultimately, if nobody will take care of you in Kali Yuga, Krishna will take care of you. And so your deities will take care of you. They'll supply the food, the house, the roof, and the spiritual education.
Thank you very much, Haribol.
Okay. Skinny woman. There's one song about it, Skinny Woman.
ISKCON's got a long way to go to come up to that standard.
Yeah.
But that's certainly how it should be. Many devotees have felt discouraged. They've kind of given their whole life, and at the end, ISKCON doesn't seem to be there for them.
Yeah. It's a strange thing, too, is that actually what I hear myself, I mean, sannyasi, by my influence is this, I don't hear that many people lamenting about how ISKCON didn't take care of me. I hear it. But what I hear more is people lamenting about how ISKCON doesn't take care of people. I mean, not them being taken care of, but how it doesn't do it. And I see people, like here in Nityagora Sundar, where we're staying, you know, he's always, like for one devotee here, has some problems and didn't have a lot of, you know, it hadn't been a big, long working career, but he'd been the temple president, all this stuff. And now he was a little bit retired position, needed some help. And so they just went out right around and got a collection and took care of his medical bills, you know. So I think, part of it, I think, is the fact it's Kali Yuga, so everybody's having a hard time, you know. Yeah. But other than that, you know, I don't know, I think, you know, if you've been a good devotee, I mean, not just like floating around the superficial thing, but if you've been a devotee, associating with devotees and stuff like that, and you need a little help, and then I think devotees are also there. They're human beings. They can sympathize with these things and so on. But in terms of the, boy, full varna ashram, man, and in the Western world, oof, wow, difficult, you know. On the other hand, in India, I think ISKCON in India will find, you know, a different circumstance there amongst the people. When our disciple Raktak left his body, for example, he was Indian. And it was just, bam, his wife. Yeah. He was a young man, maybe 45 years old, wife and kids. So he was living in Australia then, but he went back to visit his family. And what happened is his niece got married, so he kind of like had finished off his job of being uncle and stuff with the family. Then his wife went to Vrindavan, and they were just going to stay like maybe one day something. So he kind of visited the devotees in the evening. In the morning, he went to the temple, and it was, near Jala Kadasi or near Jala Purnima or something. So he went in front of the deities and started having like heart pains and this and that. They took him right to the doctor, and the doctor said, "You got to be careful. You know, you just had a heart attack, you know." And he was kind of like saying, "Oh, come on, you know, this and that." And then the doctor said, can come again. And it came again, and he died. So he left his body on you know, what was it called? Kachyayani Vrata Akadasi in front of the deities in Vrindavan. Everybody, you know, thought it was such an incredible opportunity. But immediately his wife was just, of course, she was, of course, you know, devastated in some ways. But the wife and the kid were just immediately just like, wham, they were surrounded, you know, by friends and well-wishers and everything else. I saw a video of the cremation, and everybody was there, and you know, they were, her girlfriend was holding her hand, they were walking. And after that, back in Australia, her brother is also a devotee, you know, and stuff. And he has so many friends, and it's the same thing. Everybody's making an adjustment. But the thing is, in the West, Australia, we don't know what to do exactly. You know, what should happen? And I would say in the Vedic culture, someone would ask, come on, move in with us. No, come on, move in. You know, okay, you know. So a lot of education needed. Yeah, seems like in these stories, you know. But boy, creating this in Kali Yuga, like you say, it's a long way to go. So, take shelter of Krishna.
Maharaj, I know that you addressed this a little bit during your class, but I'd like further clarification just so I can understand it. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada said that even if one is not has a husband that's not a great devotee, like Kardama, the duty of the wife is to adapt herself according to his mentality. So what if that person is a non-devotee, not interested in Krishna consciousness? So what does it mean that the wife should adapt herself according to his mentality? It seems contradictory to the principles of spiritual advancement of devotional service.
It doesn't say mentality. You see it there on the screen?
I see. It is the wife's duty to adapt herself according to his mentality.
Adopt the special circumstances in which her husband is situated. Oh, maybe the first one's that, the very first one, huh? The first one. The principles of the husband, okay. You know, the wife must see the tendencies of the husband and must be prepared to follow him. Yeah. So what it says here is, in this slide, with the apples there, if my husband is apples, I must be an apple pie, okay? That's what the visuals there are telling us. The word samanuvrata indicates that it is the duty of a wife to adopt the special circumstances in which the husband is situated, okay? Yeah. Yeah, down below it says, yeah. Okay. But even if the husband is not a great devotee like Kardama Muni, it is the wife's duty to adapt herself to his mentality. So it says adopt the special circumstances, but it says adapt to the mentality. How's that?
Yeah. Yeah, several times I've heard Mataji say that their husbands ultimately were just, they fell away from Krishna consciousness, they became very materialistic, and then eventually they just had to leave them because they were just being dragged down. Two or three occasions I've heard devotees say that, and I really could sympathize with them. So I just puzzled by how it says there. Because the whole point was they just could not adapt themselves to that kind of a mentality, materialistic mentality.
Yeah. The point is here is not to adopt it, but to adapt to it, you know. And so I would say again that what we've heard, I listened to all the lectures you gave me, the content, the links you gave me for Bhakta, what's his name, Bhakti so-and-so from Russia.
Yeah.
And he was talking about this, about, you know, you hear so many things, you know, which, you know, Prabhupada says, you know. If they ever published Prabhupada Says, it would probably be like a 20-volume book. Prabhupada said, you know. Yeah. And so anyway, we heard different things. But we heard that this is what happened, the Prabhupada, specific example, the Prabhupada applying all this, because she was trying to, like, adopt his activities and become demoniac and everything else and drink with him or whatever it was, you know, smoke marijuana, whatever, you know. And so Prabhupada said, no, this is not possible in the present age. You know? So what you should do, again, is live in the temple atmosphere like that, you know, and then always remain a well-wisher like that. So that's adapting yourself to the husband's mentality. And my husband's a demon. Okay, and so I'm a devotee, okay? So I live in the temple where I can remain in a well-wisher, and I can always be trying to contact him and trying to preach to him and praying for him, and in varying degrees, if nothing else, I can always set an example so that throughout his life, he's always going to be thinking of me. I was his wife, and she's still a devotee. So for 5 years, there may be some effect like that, you know? So that's, I think, how it's Mandodari. When Ram killed Ravana, you know, she was upset about it. But at the same time, too, there was no, you know, no dissembling in her mind. You know, her Ravana was a demon. He caused pain to so many other people, and this was exactly what could have been expected like that. So she never adopted his mentality of becoming a demon, but she adapted herself to it. Like that, and considered the circumstances, and this is the deal. You know, I gave myself in all honesty to protect my family, so now I'll do it. I'll become a chaste wife. But she never became a demon. You know, she adopted the circumstances, you know, and she adapted to the mentality. Yeah. But she remained a devotee. But of course, again, we can't be like Prahlad Maharaj or somebody maybe, and so we may need to, you know, put ourselves in a little bit distance to keep from becoming overwhelmed by it.
Yeah. Very good, very enlightening. There is a difference between adopting and adapting. In other words, you're not changing, you're adjusting yourself according to the circumstances, but it doesn't mean you're taking on that mentality.
No, my husband's a meat eater now, okay? And so, therefore, I'm going to get a second refrigerator. and stuff. And at a certain point, you know, okay, it's just, you know, that's why we keep company with the devotees, and then girlfriends may say, sister, it's getting too far away, you're starting to fall down, and she says, okay, thank you, it is, I've got to get out. Or they may say, wow, you're really a brave girl, and honestly, if it wasn't for you, we know your husband would have just been gone by now, but it looks like you're hanging in there, and you may actually save him, like that and stuff. Yeah. So, and that's the point, too, it's just special circumstances. Because it's very, you know, it's specific. There's just specific details, and for that we need specific guidance, and that comes from, you know, associating with a lot of good devotees for a good perspective within the framework of the scriptural injunctions.
Maharaj, on the subject of you were saying about Prabhupada says, and it would be many, many volumes if we were to somehow compile all the different things that people said that Prabhupada said, but weren't perhaps recorded or what have you. But that's dangerous. But I would say that equally, if not more dangerous, are things that quoting Prabhupada for things that he actually did say, taking it out of context. And we've seen that so much where someone wants to make a point and they'll find a place where Prabhupada says something, which he did in fact say, but it's not applicable to the point that someone is trying to make. I always say that we have to have a very global understanding, a comprehension of Prabhupada's books. You know, if we've read all of Prabhupada's books, now what does he say on the subject? Not what he said here in this one particular incident, but what does he say globally? And also, in Prabhupada's life, how did he apply different things that he said? So, anyway, that's just another point, that it can be very dangerous quoting Prabhupada, but missing the context.
When Prabhupada was in Bombay and they were inaugurating the Gurukula there, you know that there was a series of lectures, you know, about those and all? They were inaugurating the Gurukula, and of course it's still going on, the school there. And Prabhupada was reading from Canto 7 where it talks about the ideal brahmachari, you know. He should be like a well-oiled machine serving the spiritual master one after another. So it's very interesting. There's the Sanskrit. There's the Bhagavatam's text. There's the Bhaktivedanta purport. And then Prabhupada sometimes saying, but this is not applicable to present time. His own purports. You know? And probably, you know, it was kind of like his books were written, you know, for the next 10,000 years or something. So rather than the brahmacharis going out door to door and begging in the morning and coming back, he said they should all get together and go in procession chanting kirtan and go to the beach each morning, you know, and bathe in the ocean and come back. And that was his how he adjusted it. But like you're saying, there's Prabhupada's saying what Prabhupada says, we've got to be careful because, you know, sometimes Prabhupada himself from a broader perspective tells us how to apply that in a certain circumstance. Yeah. Let me go on here. I got today's Janava. Sorry, double clock. So I got a picture here. Shri Ram Jaya Ram Jaya Jaya Ram. Shri Ram Jaya Ram Jaya Jaya Ram. Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram.
Raghupati Raghava
Ram. Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram.
Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram.
Okay. So everybody knows what Sita means, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Sita means furrow. Like the plow furrow. So it means that the earth, well, the earth is turned up after the plowing was going. And I think in the thing, I got that as a quotation here. Down below, I have a citation, www.database/english/chaitanya-charitamrita/chasmajalila, chapter 9. And this is a nice little thing about Sita from our scriptures. At that time, the wind, so of course, one of the most famous contexts here is the kidnapping of Sita. And actually, this should go after this. I got my slides in the wrong order. Okay, actually, in backwards order here. Okay, there it is. In totally backwards order. Okay. Oh, that's what I did. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. I guess there's time enough to. I guess probably not time enough to do this. Okay. Okay. But if you go and look at Maja 9, which I can just click on it, it'll take us there, but I don't think there's time enough to do it. Then it's the story about Lord Chaitanya was traveling in South India. And he met one Brahmin who invited him to take his lunches with him. There's the Vedic culture. Not just the married life, but also the whole sannyas life. So Lord Chaitanya was being accommodated by him. And he was a very, very great expert in Ramlila. And there was no cooking going on. You know? And so Lord Chaitanya was kind of asking why the person was looking morose or something. You know? And then he explained that, well, there's nothing to cook right now, but when Lakshman brings it, fruits and roots and everything from the forest, and Sita will cook, and then we can offer it to Ram and take our lunch. So Lord Chaitanya was happy with this guy's Lila Smarnam. But then he took his lunch, and then the Brahmin was fasting and looking very unhappy. And Lord Chaitanya said, "What's wrong, my dear sir?" You know, and he said, "Oh, you know, Sita, the mother of the universe, has been kidnapped by this evil, foul, you know, Ravana, like that. And so I cannot maintain my life. I'm dying, you know." And then Lord Chaitanya, of course, very, very famous, he told him, you're a learned fellow. You should know the fact that matter never has the potency. Ravana never had the potency to touch Mother Sita, like that, and so on. And she was always made pure and pure, like that, and so on. So he finally convinced him to take his lunch, that Sita was safe. Then he went on continuing, and he went to the, Korma Temple? One Korma Temple, and he found a very, very old Shastra, which described how the second Ravana approached to touch Sita, she disappeared and went to the abode of the fire god, and an imitation Sita was put in her place, like that. And I think this was Mayavati. Ravana tried to kidnap her, and so she abandoned her, burned her body to ashes right in front of him, and said, and this is, "You've hurt me, a woman. In the end, a woman will be the cause of your downfall." So I've heard that she became the Maya Sita and also got the opportunity to be absorbed in meditating on Ram and separation. And then, of course, when they tested Sita, the Maya Sita went into the fire, and then the fire god brought the real Sita out. So a very, very important aspect of her character is the example of this chastity and everything else. So I think next slide we have it here. Yes. This is actually from the Krishna Dharma on the Vedabase, from the Ramayana by Krishna Dharma on the Vedabase, which is very good. At that time, when Sita was kidnapped, the wind stopped blowing, and the sun appeared lusterless and dull. The whole creation seemed out of order, and a dense darkness enveloped the four quarters. Brahma saw by his divine vision that Sita had been seized violently by Ravana, and he said to the gods, and I've adjusted this a little bit here, "This is indeed lamentable, but our purpose is accomplished. Ravana is a dead man." Yeah. That's it. Other songs, you know, I have one song, a very, very nice thing. It's from the Ramayana movie, the Japanese Ramayana movie. There's a very, very nice Hindi Sanskrit song in there when Hanuman meets Sita, at a translation. And he says to her, he said, "Ravana's death was born the moment he touched you," like that. The great sages in the forest also saw Sita being taken. Knowing Ravana's destruction to be imminent, they felt simultaneously agonized and joyful. It says that she was crying out so piteously the entire universe went off of this axis of rotation. It was so intense. We do things and they have an effect on the mental level. And so Sita's kidnapping, of course, is an incredible story with all kinds of significance. You look on the internet for Sita Haran. And here's a very, very nice drawing I saw of this Ravana and Sita and Jatayu. It's very nice. Okay. So also we here have, this is from the ninth canto, chapter 10. The Lord achieved the hand of Mother Sita, who was equally as endowed with transcendental qualities of form, beauty, behavior, age, and nature. So she was endowed with very qualified form, with beauty, her behavior, and the proper age, and the proper nature. Indeed, she was the goddess of fortune who constantly rests on the chest of the Lord. There's also a Hindi Ramayana, if you've seen it or not, a cartoon one, which is very good. And when it comes to, they did portray some of these things very nicely. When it came to the time of the, what's it called, Sita Swayambar, and a very kind of nice comic thing of different princes competing and failing. Then Ram steps through and Dasarath, Janaka's up there, just lamenting and saying, I must close this. Nobody can win the hand of Sita. Is there no, I don't know, heroes on earth? Lakshman steps forward and says, no, you cannot say that. As long as my brother Ram is here, no man can dare to say there are no heroes on this earth. Okay, very nice. Guru Tattva. And then Sita's behind her veil with her sisters and stuff. And Ram's going to lift the bow and everything else, but as he before he does it, he looks up at her, and she very, very gently looks back at him and nods her head like that. He's asking her permission to win her, and she nods her head very gently. So very, very nice, description of their qualities, their qualifications, and we can expect such good results. Even I see this in ISKCON, the second generation, some of these weddings between children who have grown up in ISKCON, they're just amazing. How the qualifications, and we don't know where it's going to lead, but right now it's starting off as something quite elevated, very elevated. Okay. And then Janavadevi, because it's also Janavadevi's appearance today, I guess, too. Sri Nityananda's two wives, Vasudha and Janava, are expansion of Lord Balaram's eternal consorts, Varuni and Revati. I got this from, ISKCON Desire Tree or something. Srila Thakura Bhaktivinoda offers his prayers to Janava. Janava Mata in Kalyana Kalpataru. O Janava Devi, by the power of your divine qualities, be merciful to this servant of yours. Dispel this illusion which torments me and relieve me of material existence. Let me take shelter at your lotus feet. You are Nityananda Shakti, the divine energy of Lord Nityananda himself. You are the guru of Krishna Bhakti. Be merciful to me and grant me the shade of your lotus feet, which are like a desire tree. You have delivered countless abominable sinners. Please deliver me in the same way. Today, praying for your mercy, this lowly sinner falls at your holy feet. Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. I was trying to imagine, Janava, maybe myself, might think that by now she's an old lady, or something like that. But she must have been a really, wry, I was thinking like a wry, really, you meet her, and it's not like she's like some heavy, haughty, terrifying, woman like this and that and stuff. She's looking at us and joking and smiling and, very, very penetrating and, understanding that she's the boss, but at the same time, too, you understand she loves to have fun and she understands everything. She understands our sincerity. She understands our weaknesses like that. And so she's really, the supreme mother, in so many ways. Janavi Devi Ki Jai. So any final questions or comments or here about, you know, Janava, Sita, you know?
Anybody?
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Well, I guess not. Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Swamiji. Lovely class.
Hari Bol.
Takarani ki jai.
Jai.
Takarani ki jai.
Hari Bol.
Today's a good day. Good day for monkeys.
That works for me.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hari Bol.